this one, Miles.
You are listening to The Business Called Cricket, only on Red Podcast.
Sanjog, thank you very, very much for joining me on this podcast. Well, we have had people on The Business Called Cricket who have given us an understanding of how the ecosystem works, from cricketers to administrators to commentators, storytellers of different form. But yours is a very, very unique perception, a broadcaster. Now, let me ask you, you know, you are in the business of displaying cricket, but just as a broadcaster, how gratifying has it been to see India win against England? And what does it really mean for your business right now?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me to join you, Rika. It's a pleasure to be here and talk cricket, sport, and interestingly, the business of this game that we love so much. It's been the ideal start, really. I don't think we could have asked for a better restart to cricket in India, just in terms of the context of the series opposition, England being a great touring side to come over, the context of the world's largest cricket stadium being unveiled, the fact that cricket was resuming in India and fans were looking forward to it. And that really formed the foundation of our marketing campaign, India Tayyar Hai, because we believed Indian fans had missed international cricket happening in India. Of course, we had domestic cricket and Mushtaq Ali happening before that. But, you know, I think there was general yearning amongst fans to see India play in India again. And that really set the context for the series. What added luster to the entire context was the partial return of crowds, both in Chennai and in Ahmedabad. The fact that there was a day and night test. So I think all those factors combined made it the ideal platform for resumption of cricket in India. And that same context provided the ideal platform for brands and advertisers to want to associate themselves with this high on context series. So I'm sure you're aware, we had 18 sponsors on board for the series even before a ball was bowled, which just goes to show how much faith advertisers have in cricket as a sport and as a vehicle for reaching millions of fans.
That's incredible.
And you know, the fact that it turned out to be a competitive series, and, you know, no one likes to see India lose, but the fact that England was in with a chance, there was a World Test Championship final on the line. The England team had their own set of opportunities. After winning the first test, they actually went into the second test and created more opportunities to go ahead. The kind of comeback that we saw from the Indian team really lent itself to a great cricketing contest that was available to fans and which reflected in viewership for the second and third tests. So the second and third tests of the series, one being the day and night test, which was the third test, and the second test are actually two of the five most watched test matches since 2016 on television.
That's massive. Fantastic.
You know, which just goes to show, one, the love that this country has for this great game of ours, and two, how, as a broadcaster and as a partner to BCCI, we've really put every ounce of effort into making this series as big as it has become. We've broadcast the series in Hindi, in Tamil, in Telugu, in Kannada, beyond the world feed that is produced, which has made the series even more accessible to fans across the country.
So basically, you're saying you have broadcast it in four languages, right? The series?
Five including English.
Five including English. That's massive. Sanket, we'll come back to the whole story of regional broadcast and, you know, just taking cricket beyond the English-speaking audience. But there's a very interesting word you used when you were answering the previous question, which is context. Now, as a broadcaster, when you put out content, do you always think about putting context to content?
Absolutely. Rika, I'm glad you picked out that word from the fairly long answer that I gave. Because really, at the end of the day, the reason why fans engage with a sporting contest is because of the context. And the context comes in different forms. The context is in terms of the stakes involved in the series. If I take the example of the India-England series, there was a World Test Championship final up for grabs. Context comes in the form of rivalry. So there are some traditional or modern rivalries that fans love to watch. It comes in the form of competition beyond rivalries. So a team like England, which is one of the best or has been one of the best touring sides over the last couple of years, is obviously a team that fans want to watch play against India. So that gives context. And there are other contexts which are in the ecosystem which need to be amplified. For example, the whole context of cricket returning to Indian shores makes a fan that much more excited about the series. The fact that the world's largest cricket stadium is going to be unveiled and it's going to be a day and night test match gives that match and that leg of the series that much more context. So effectively, sport by its very nature is about context. And context also can come from the heroes of the game. You know, so the context can also come from Virat Kohli or Rohit Sharma enjoying a great run of form, or for that matter, being on the cusp of a milestone. You know, how many times do you and I remember when we were growing up tuning into an India game only to watch Sachin Tendulkar open?
Right.
Sachin and Sehwag go out to bat. And
or, you know, Mithali Raj getting to her 10,000 international runs. That's the context of the series, perhaps, for me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Mithali Raj and all the records that she has to her name, you know, the promise of Smriti Mandana being a modern great, or Harmanpreet Kaur, as she was an emerging player a few years back, but now is established as one of the hardest hitters of the cricket ball. You know, all of that adds a layer of context to a contest, which actually determines how appealing the contest is going to be. And it's the context which really throws up what we call narratives and stories. You know, narratives tend to be more longer running threads of conversation or threads of content, and stories tend to be more functional.
Focused on a particular content. Sanjog, so let me...
I'll just add one thing, Riga. The way that we think about, you know, the interrelatability of context, narratives and stories is we believe context drives interest and appeal. Narratives drive engagement of the fan with the overall series, tour, etc. And stories deliver delight, right?
It's the lovely
stories that finally get you to go wow while watching broadcast. So it's really an interplay of context, narratives and stories across marketing, content and production that drives the appeal for the game.
So when you decide storylines, when you decide, when you know what is the context and thereby decide storylines, do you brief your commentators accordingly that this is what we are looking at? And what kind of research really goes into it? I'm really curious to know. And how do you get all the research collated?
It's really interesting, Rika. In fact, you know, the kind of research and even analytical work that the team puts in the start of a series, the prep for a series, is no different than the way any cricket team would prepare for a series. You know, so typically a month before a tour has to begin, there is a first cut, fairly exhaustive document of stories that is created by what we call our analytics team, which works with our analytics partner, which is an agency that provides all the data that we need. And this is data that is both macro level around records and milestones, but also extremely micro level. You know, data which pertains to how many times has Virat Kohli been dismissed to an outswinger by James Anderson in a certain set of conditions. Right. So it's extremely granular, and it's the way that you would expect any team to prepare. And what we are trying to do really is really define the brass tacks for the coverage, which has to do with these hundreds of stories that need to be generated for each player, each team, each venue, across multiple, multiple facets of the game. What we're also doing in the process is really prepping the commentators for two things. One, to drive the larger context, the narratives at a series level, but also really pick up the stories that they really feel for and they really bring them alive on broadcast. And then it's a part of the pre-production process. So the way that any live broadcast will happen is it typically has 30 to 45 days of pre-production where a lot of these stories are put together, not just in terms of research, but also in terms of deciding how you want to visually tell the story, right? So do you go into deep archives to figure out, can you find instances that you want to refer to of a certain batsman playing a certain bowler or a certain batsman playing a certain kind of delivery or a bowler depending on a certain line and length to dismiss batsman. And all of that is put together in the pre-production phase as visual stories that the commentators will use as stimulus to really bring alive the story that they want to tell of a particular batsman, a particular bowler, or the contest between them.
This really is tough for cricket fans, I must say, Sanjog. I'm really intrigued to know this whole celebration of Gavaskar's 50 years of debut. Did the storyline come from the broadcaster or BCCI remembered that there was a date like this coming up and we need to prepare for it?
The BCCI was planning for it as a celebration during the test match. There was a conversation between BCCI and the broadcaster about how best to amplify it, both in stadia and on the broadcast. But credit to BCCI for wanting to glorify and elevate the stature of one of India's greatest cricketers, if not the greatest cricketer that India has ever seen. And really deciding to make an example of how we need to remember our legends. The kind of service they have done to the game. And it's interesting that that the BCCI decided to do it, and we were fully supportive of it for two reasons. One, there is an entire generation of cricket fans who haven't seen Sunny G at his best, right? And have only heard stories perhaps of how great he was. When they see a celebration like this on broadcast, they feel the need to also revere him, one, and two, get to know a little bit more about the unbelievable history that Indian cricket has. And the second part of it is, given that he's a commentator, and given that he's one of the most reputed voices of the game, for a young fan who hasn't heard much of Sunny Gavaskar the player, this is a great reminder of why this commentator is entitled to the exalted opinion that he has.
Right.
He has achieved everything that he has in his playing days.
Very interesting. Sanjog, you spoke about commentators, you serving storylines to the commentators, and at times they pick up stories that they find, they find nicer than the others or are very close to them. Could you give us one or a couple of such examples when it has happened that you've given them, say, 50 storylines and they have picked out three or four?
Rika, this happens before every game because, almost all of our commentators, other than a few who are great storytellers, are former cricketers themselves. And most former cricketers want to pick up stories that they believe they're in the best position to tell. Yes, there are some who are adept at telling all kinds of stories. And, there are enough and more examples of that, both of former cricketers and of non-cricketers who revel in telling fantastic stories. But most former cricketers would want to play on what they know best. Having said that, if I take the example of someone like a VVS Lakshman, who's a part of our commentary panel for most of our broadcasts. He would talk as much about how to play spin as he would talk about what the spinner is trying to do to get the batsman out. Because he's seen it, he's seen both sides, right? He's seen how he tried to tackle a certain spinner or a certain kind of spin on a certain kind of surface. But at the same time, he's observed spinners trying to get him out. That's one part of it. The other part of it is as a coach, and as a coach to youngsters and to IPL teams, he's now seen what various cricketers tend to do, both as batsmen and as bowlers, and thus has a learned opinion on what they are doing or should be doing based on his observations. So invariably, you know, the way that it works, and the best example of this is Select Dugout, which is going to be returning for Vivo IPL 2020.
I absolutely love that.
So that will be returning. So you'll be happy to know that Select Dugout will return in full force for Vivo IPL 2021. You know, the whole purpose of Select Dugout is to cater to fans of the game who have a deep understanding of the game, but even more than that, want to have a deep insight into the game beyond what is obvious on as they watch the game, right? Select Dugout was conceptualized largely to bring to light the games behind the game that are played between the two dugouts and by the coaches and by the analysts and by the captains and the players themselves to try and...
Also a lot about mind games, right?
Correct. Absolutely. And which is why the kind of panel that we have for Select Dugout is very different from the kind of panel that we typically have for our World Feed. The World Feed is looking to appeal to fans of all kinds, right? It's trying to appeal to fans who watch 5 games of the IPL and 50 games of the IPL, while a Select Dugout is really a feed or a service which is looking to cater to those fans who take their cricket not necessarily only seriously. I'm sure you watch Select Dugout. You know it's not an attempt at putting together a really cold, serious feed. It's actually
not at all
great fun, and there's a lot of banter between these experts who are together in the dugout. But the attempt is to go deep into the game. And the attempt is to have any fan who's logging on to watch Select Dugout to feel that at the end of that feed or at the end of that service, he or she knows the game a lot better, knows the players a lot better, and is in a position to watch the player or the team or the game next time and almost be able to, if not predict, then at least prescribe what the player, the team, or the coach should be looking to do.
Right. Sanjog, interestingly, I have to ask you, in the post-pandemic scenario, to make these fans a part, a stakeholder of in your dugout and in the various chats that you bring them in, how did you have to, you did have to conceptualize this whole Zoom situation. I don't know what platform you use. And, you know, have them connected with your experts remotely.
Yes.
Did you do things, did you conceptualize newer things as you were returning to broadcast the IPL last September?
So there are three phases to our lockdown / pandemic journey, Rika. The first phase of it really is when the lockdown was announced in March and all live sports stopped. The real challenge for us was how do we keep sports fans engaged with our network when there was no live sport happening. And that first so the challenge was how do you engage fans on one side, and the challenge on the other side was how do you create content to engage those fans, because the production studio was effectively shut. And
okay,
we had to innovate on both sides, on air and off air, right? So the first real attempt at putting together content without having anyone inside the production studio was a show by the name of Cricket Connected, which we launched a few weeks into the lockdown, which was really an attempt at doing exactly what you just asked me about, which is connecting fans to experts and keeping the conversation around the game going. And it had a production leg to it, which entailed putting together a work from home production setup. And it had a fan engagement leg to it, which was to do things like having 15 kids interview Virat Kohli in one of the episodes. So we had 15.
Yeah, kids very interesting it was. I remember.
So 15 kids from around the world, because effectively the world had locked down. 15 kids logging in to talk to Virat about all things under the sun. So so there is the interactive element to it, which is how do you engage fans, and there is the production element to it, which is how do you create a stream of content within the constraints that you face due to the pandemic. And once we got that, the second phase was for us to actually extend what we had created both as interactivity and as work from home production to the live setup. And so the second phase of that really was for us to actually relive a lot of games from our archives with experts or former players who were part of those games joining us live. So we celebrated the T20 World Cup 2007 win by doing what we call the relive, where we played the game live, and we had heroes from the game, including Irfan Pathan, Gautam Gambhir, Yusuf Pathan, Robin Uttappa, etc., joining us to tell us the real story of what was happening on the field of play during the game. Right. So that was really the second phase of our journey, because all of these experts and commentators and former players were joining us from home. They were still not coming into the production. The entire production was happening from home. So all of our crew that was producing these games live was actually located in 6 different cities. And they were logging in. The third phase of the journey was to extend this to a live broadcast. And the pilot for that was the Caribbean Premier League. So we produced the Caribbean Premier League in Hindi, with no production crew member being in the studio. Everything was...
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so, it really was the proof of concept as far as live work from home production is concerned. And we took all those learnings and applied them to IPL. The Bangla feed on Dream 11 IPL 2020 was actually completely produced from home. All the other teams also were hybrids. We had Nasir Hussain joining us on Select Dugout from his home in England. We had Gautam Gambhir joining us on the Hindi feed from his home in Delhi. And what the pandemic showed us was what we were originally seeing as a challenge of how to produce with no one coming to the studio actually became a huge opportunity for us to not just do things differently, but do a lot of things that we had been doing a certain way differently and better, right?
So would you say it also brought down the cost of production hugely?
So it made the production more efficient, I would say, Rika. Obviously, producing in the pandemic entailed bringing on board costs that are non-traditional with respect to testing, with respect to the biosecure bubble, with respect to production being done a certain way. I won't say it was a blanket reduction in cost. It did make the entire production process much more efficient, but even more than efficiency, the fact that you had a virtual commentary box where commentators from all over the world could log on to the feed at any point of time and commentate and be a part of the service just suddenly opens up all kinds of possibilities that didn't exist in the pre-pandemic world. So the new model is effectively becoming an enabler of a significantly enhanced consumer experience than just being something that is being used to drive efficiency.
True. Sanjog, because this podcast is going to go out on various Red FM stations, I want you to answer this question of mine. When the IPL starts this year, in how many languages will the commentary be heard?
Oh, that's a really tough question, Rika, because our ambition around IPL just keeps growing every year. IPL, for us, is a property that we believe needs to continue to grow if cricket has to continue growing. Our ambition around IPL tends to be elevated each year because every year we seem to be creating new records for viewership. I'm sure you're aware the last IPL, which was the Dream 11 IPL 2020, was the most watched IPL ever. We clocked 400 billion minutes of consumption, which had never been clocked before. And the ambition for us as part of our long-term strategy is to deliver compelling content in the most accessible manner possible. And accessibility in this country means three things. One, accessibility over a platform of choice, which means the channel should be available or Disney Plus Hotstar should be available. So basically, you must have access to the match to begin with. The second thing is you must have access to the match in a language of your choice, because this country really isn't just one culture, one language. It is, it's almost like an orchestra, and each of the, you know, each of the instruments and each of the musicians has a role to play. And that's how we see our feeds, that all of them collectively deliver the service or the broadcast that we want to deliver. We've already started considering two more languages. I'm not in a position to tell you which two languages are currently, but there may be two languages that are added to Vivo IPL 2021 broadcast. We are also,
and that will make it to how many? The bouquet will become how many? You've already done six languages?
So, let me just complete the thought there. The third part of accessibility was actually around defining our feeds, not just by languages, right? So what we've tried to do with Select Dugout, although it is in English, which is a language in which a feed already existed, is try to cater to a very different fan, right? So the way that we think about it, Rika, is not just in terms of languages, it's in terms of the fan that we are trying to cater to. And if I was to look at how many feeds that we've traditionally created, the range has been between 7 to 9. We may actually have the number of feeds going up to 10 this year.
Wow, that's incredible. Sanjog, I'll also have to ask you, since you mentioned about Select Dugout, as a broadcaster, you are seeing stories not just on the field, but off the field, privy to different kind of information. There's one dramatic, event, or there was one dramatic development, let me put it this way, during the last IPL when we heard about the passing of Dean Jones. Dean Jones, a character who was very dear to me. I have worked very closely with him for about 7 years when he worked with NDTV as Professor Dino. Tell us, I mean, what was your experience as a broadcaster when you are in the middle of a pickle like this and your, you know, talent just passes away?
You know, the question that you ask is a really tough one on two counts, Rika. One, Dino was someone who was, as you described him, a force of nature and an integral part of Select Dugout. He was actually someone who played a fairly pivotal and instrumental role in the design and development of Select Dugout. And in some sense, he was part of the Star Sports team that really brought and presented IPL very differently from the way that it had been presented in the past. It was obviously tragic. The team was devastated. Most of us had worked very closely with Dino over the last 3 to 4 years. He was, as I said, a force of nature. What we tried to do in that moment, I can share with you, there was a feeling that we should cancel the feed that day, the Select Dugout broadcast that day. But both the crew and the talent who worked so closely with him as part of Dugout came to me. And we had a meeting. The initial, as I said, feeling was that we should cancel the broadcast that night. But all of us felt that it was more important for us to celebrate Dino's memories because that is what Dino will have wanted. He will have wanted his favorite feed, as he called it many times, and he was a big proponent of it, to not go missing on a game night. And that is what we kept in our hearts as the sentiment that Dino will have wanted us to have. and went ahead with the broadcast. It was not easy. I can tell you there were a lot of tears, some that you saw on air from the likes of Brett Lee, Brian Lara, Scott Styris. But there were a lot of tears shed behind the scenes. Credit to the team that was putting out Select Dugout that night to put out a fantastic broadcast and do all they could do to create a sense of bittersweet celebration mm-hmm. around the memories that we had with Dino. That's really all that night meant to us. It meant to us two things. One, remembering a great friend, and two, remembering a cricketer, an expert, a commentator, but more than anything else, one of the biggest and most articulate ambassadors of the game. And we just wanted to celebrate everything that he had given all of us and he had given this great game of ours.
That's beautiful. Okay, Sanjog, I will bring you from past to the present. And I'll ask you, what is it that a broadcaster looks at when he or she decides on the property to invest in, like the women's cricket, the series between India and Australia that you are currently displaying?
India and South Africa, you mean?
India and South Africa. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
No worries. Look, I mean, women's cricket is not a new investment for us, Rika. This journey started for us in 2013 when we decided to invest significantly behind the World Cup that was happening in India, which entailed for the first time a dedicated marketing campaign combined with a broadcast that went beyond the world feed and also airing more games than ever before from that World Cup. And that journey has just continued from that tournament onwards. We've invested significantly behind women's cricket over the last 5 years, and we're seeing significant gains from that investment. The viewership for the Women's World T20 in 2020 was 11x that of the viewership of Women's World T20 2016. Which just goes to show the kind of latent potential that women's cricket had and was not being tapped. we believe the watershed moment in our journey as far as women's cricket is concerned came during the World Cup final in 2017 when we saw Lords being packed to capacity and viewership of close to 20 million in India on TV only. And apart from the fact that it's the right thing to do, it just in terms of giving women's cricket the attention it deserves, it is also now beginning to make business sense to do so because we are seeing significant growth in the appeal of the game and expansion of the fan base. So it's definitely going to continue to attract investments from our side. The great news is over the last 3 or 4 years, the BCCI has also started showering women's cricket with significant attention, both on the international side as well as the Women's T20 Challenge. And again, credit to BCCI for ensuring that the Women's T20 Challenge happens last year, despite the constraints that existed due to the pandemic and due to the tournament happening in UAE. We saw a significant growth in viewership. I think more than 40% growth in viewership of the Women's T20 Challenge when we compare 2020 to the 2019 edition. So I think, there is enough and more reasons for the entire ecosystem, including, stakeholders who have strategic interests in building brands around the idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion to actually come forward and support women's cricket in a big way.
As a broadcaster, would you say that it makes business sense to have a longer Women's T20 Challenge because of the kind of performers the stage has thrown up?
So I think from our point of view, there is definitely a case for expansion of the Women's T20 Challenge, although it does boil down to the timing of that expansion. You know, let's not forget that we are still operating under significant constraints presented by the COVID situation. But if you ask me, in the medium to long term, is there a case for an expansion for the T20 Challenge? My answer would be yes. What the right time for this expansion is, what is the right window for it to ensure that it doesn't get crowded out by the men's IPL, or for that matter by other events, what is the right structure for the tournament, are all conversations that the board needs to have with its various stakeholders to really shape what the next phase of this journey is going to be.
Sanjog, since you asked about expansion, I will have to ask you, you said about expansion, I'll have to ask you one last question on the way you extend yourself from being the head of sports at Star India to the head of sports committee of FICCI. What does your role really entail, and how do you see the growth of Indian sports and also that vision of India becoming a sporting nation coming true?
Oh, I may struggle to answer this question in the time that we have, given it's the last question of our conversation, Rika. But you know, to keep this short and sweet, we believe at the FICCI Sports Committee that it is important for sport to be considered a worthy career, a pastime worth indulging in, and a recreation worth engaging with for as many people as possible. It's only if we can expand the participation and fandom for sport that we can have sport grow in this country. Because don't forget, an amateur participant or a fan of today is a professional athlete of the future. So both for the development of sport and the talent pipeline of this for sport in this country to be as robust as we want it to be, it is extremely important for the ecosystem for sport to be promoting both participation and fandom. And I think that's where the FICCI Sports Committee looks to work with the Ministry of Youth Affairs and Sports to really partner with the government and arms of the government on one side, including the Sports Authority of India, and corporates and the private sector on the other side, to really drive forward the progress towards this well-stated ambition of making India a sporting nation. But at the very heart of it, what we are trying to do is we are trying to promote sport as a part of life. And it's important that it becomes a part of life for everyone in this country, not just for those who have already played sport in some form or manner, but even for those who are not participating in sport, but are still rooting for their favorite player or their favorite team and are engaging with sport in some form or manner. And the more diverse, large and diverse this population is, the more successful sportsmen will be, because you will just have a bigger pipeline of sports persons. The more money will flow into the game, and various games, not just one or two sports, but all sports. And eventually, the more successful India will be at the global stage. So the way that we think about it at the FICCI Sports Committee is that it's as much about building or expanding the base of sport in this country as it is about focusing on really the top of the pyramid, which is the elite athletes. And
right. We
can get government and arms of the government working together with the private sector to really drive this growth and turn what I've said previously, that sport which is on the move, can we turn it into a movement? If we can make that happen, then it is in the interest of everyone, including elite athletes and young participants in sport who, even if they don't pursue sport as a career, stand to gain a lot by virtue of the lessons that sport teaches us about life.
Sanjog, it's a very, very interesting thought. Make the move into a movement. Thank you very, very much for those wonderful thoughts. Your efforts in putting context to content. I look forward to the lovely stories that you bring forth for fans like us. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Rika. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Always hit this one, Miles.
You were listening to The Business Called Cricket, only on Red Podcast.